W1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Lindsay Watts. Taking to the streets again, Israel's largest trade union group with 800,000 members is on strike, adding to the surging protest movement against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to overhaul the judiciary. More than 24 people killed after twisters roared through Alabama and Mississippi over the weekend. ABC's Whit Johnson is in the town of Rolling Fork, Mississippi.
The tornado's hitting at the most dangerous time, after dark.
All I could hear was breaking windows. It come through my house.
Much of Rolling Fork, Mississippi, unrecognizable, reduced to rubble, stretching for miles. Governor Tate Reeves touring the disaster zone with FEMA.
Former President Trump holding the first rally for his presidential run. It was in Waco, Texas, and he spent much of it proclaiming innocence in the multiple legal cases he's facing. Prince Harry in a British courtroom, part of a lawsuit against the publisher of the Daily Mail over privacy violations. This is ABC News. A new survey by the National Association for Business Economics finds most respondents believe the U.S. is heading into a recession. More than half of those answering think it will happen at some point this year. Questions surround the death Sunday of police officers in Louisiana.
Two Baton Rouge police officers aboard the department's Robinson R-44 helicopter were dispatched to help with a ground pursuit. They were later called off, but never made it back to the airport. The wreckage was found in a field 9 hours later. But Baton Rouge Police Chief Murphy Paul says,
"We're asking the community to be respectful of the investigative process because it does take time."
Federal aviation officials have begun a search for the cause of the crash. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
NCAA basketball's March Madness winnowed down to the Final Four of the men's side. Miami beating the Texas Longhorns, playing its first national semifinal against Connecticut this weekend. And San Diego State will face Florida Atlantic. The women's Final Four will be set after tonight. Lindsay Watts, ABC News.
Oh, now wait until you pull up to the stop and go light. But when you do, go ahead and save the Civic Media station to one of your presets. The Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens, and also on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Lawmakers appear more united about taking action against the owners of the TikTok social media app. Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher tells ABC's This Week that the CEO's testimony last week did nothing to quell privacy concerns. The special election for Wisconsin's 8th Senate seat will have statewide implications. A Republican Senate supermajority could launch impeachment proceedings against Democrats from Governor Evers to Milwaukee County DA John Chisholm.
I've already called for his resignation. The judges, the circuit court judges, I think have failed the community by releasing or not having a high enough bail on these criminals.
Republican Dan Knodel is running against Democrat Jody Habersh-Simkin. Both candidates were on Upfront yesterday. In sports, the Bucks are at Detroit tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, "We're going to amputate your leg." I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
And welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That's Mondays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing all right. Monday, right?
Yeah, man.
We got that day right. How did your prom go? Last time on Friday we were talking, you had the prom that you were going to be doing the decorations, et cetera, for.
Man, the prom was fantastic. And I really wish everybody could get a chance to see about 250-300 disabled people who come in their finery and who come into a whimsical. This was called the MPSBs, you know, like the ESPYs award.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was set up in that kind of a manner, red carpet, all of those things, and to Miss. I'm going to butcher her name. I'll think of it in a little while. I don't want to butcher her name. Such a wonderful, wonderful lady who creates this in her mind.
Uh-huh.
Heidem Jean. I'll leave it alone until after the break. Creates this in her mind. And so when you come and we start putting those things together, you're like, What is this? I don't know. It's just, and then after about 7 hours, 8 hours of putting it together, it all comes together, and you see what she had in her mind, and mm-hmm. only she had in her mind that all of us working to try to put it together. See, she already saw it, and so the cafeteria was really beautiful. All the people coming was beautiful. The families, the catered meal, all of it.
Well, you should, worth it. Yeah, I mean, the things you're involved with are kind of spectacular. That and the drums, these various things you're doing are, I applaud it.
Let me say this, Sandy. Let's get at it, man. Let's get at it. So Donald Trump, man, I try not to. I really try not to.
He's like a guilty pleasure almost. You know, I find myself inevitably going, and that's like a moth to a flame.
Yeah, you too.
Well, you kind of can't. You know, you don't like him, but there's something that's fascinating about why are people drawn to this person, who acts this way and says these things and is this apparently.
He has no shame.
Yeah, no shame. A grifter who you know he puts on these performances. I mean, they're not political activities at all. They're performance activities in which he just stands up there and says whatever passes through his brain. It's probably an echo in there.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Because we're in 2023. He's still talking about 2020. He's still talking about how they took the election from him. And yet there are people still standing. They took me.
Well, because you know what? It's exactly that sentence you just said. It was the important, they took the election from him. That's exactly what he says. And the question is, who's they? Who's the capital T, they, that he's talking about? He doesn't describe it. It's much like make America great again. Let's take America back to the people, to the way it was when you liked it, you right. The listener. And they that took the election away from him are anybody you can imagine that you don't like, that is contrary to what you politically hope for. They are the ones who took the election away from me. Okay. Yeah. So no, but I mean, he's not defining it other than letting everyone define their enemy. And it works, you know, it's worked for him in multiple ways.
So it's amazing to me that he stands up and takes photos with a baseball bat and he's proud of it. And he's going to use this on the district attorney in New York. And he's,
well, he would allege that that isn't what the baseball bat was all about.
I know, but
he's pretty crafty clever, in his simplistic way about having culpable deniability. When he said there'll be death and destruction if an indictment is brought against him, he'll say, "Well, I was just predicting what would happen. I wasn't hoping that it would happen. I was warning that it would happen, and so I'm not at fault." But it clearly, like you said off the air when we were talking, it was clearly a dog whistle. It's like, hey, if there's an indictment, people out there who are my ardent followers, let's have some mob violence.
Do you think he'll ever pay a price for this?
I think, unfortunately, because, you know, we know what it looks like when we read in other countries when ex-political leaders get arrested. We always think, well, that's sign.
Right.
No. I think we think that the ex-political leader is getting chased for political reasons by his successor. And so we, you know, it tends to make it look like a very unstable governmental situation where someone gets out of power, he gets arrested. Okay, the new guys, that's a tough guy thing to do. So, it just has a bad, it's got a bad cosmetic look about it to arrest, to pursue, to indict the ex-leader. So it's going to take a very strong case. And you know, I think this case that's being brought by Bragg that involves this hush money payment, that's not going to be the one that would pin the tail on the donkey, so to speak.
But there are others that are in the pipeline that may. Let me ask you, Sandy. So Mitch McConnell has been... Maybe he's a little more injured than what anybody thought.
Well, it said he had a concussion. And so, you know, at that age, I remember when Hillary Clinton, when she was a good deal younger, had a fall, had a brain bleed, had a vision problem for quite a while, and had a substantial effect. I think at that age, if you take a bad fall, you can end up with, like, brain bleeds and things that are truly serious.
So the reason I'm asking you is Mitch McConnell seems to be like the lone sane person that the Republican Party, and it's hard to say that, but the truth of the matter is he's the guy who's just trying to keep things under control.
Well, it seems like the Republican Party is pretty good at taking people who appear to be moderate and chasing them out of the party, Kunzinger and people who are even not very moderate conservatives, like the vice president's daughter.
Right.
You know, these people get chased out of the party. So the party's becoming, in most respects, less and less moderate. We see the face of the party now is Boebert.
And Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Marjorie Taylor Greene and Getz. The Ohio congressman?
Yeah, that guy.
the wrestling coach fellow.
I mean, they're at a point, Sandy, where they're going to have to really, the moderates, I think, just have been overwhelmed, right? Or kind of run out. And so the Republican Party has this right now constituted is, you know, that there are many people who are saying this is just too much for me.
Well,
and then that gives pause for Donald Trump to enter into this now.
Well, enter into it. I don't think Donald Trump's ever exited. And I think that all Donald Trump is doing is displaying the fact that he continues to have a strong grip over a small portion of the Republican Party. But clearly, the most conservative portion of the party has got a hold of the party. I don't think it necessarily means it's a majority of the party, but it's the kind of willful minority that can have a big impact on, for instance, primary elections. And it turns out that fear of primary is what causes most incumbents to bend their and compromise their own ideology in the direction of whatever it takes to avoid that primary fight. And so I think that that's the story clearly in the Republican Party, where a threatened primary for an incumbent drives that incumbent further to the right in order to try and avoid the risk of losing their fight. In so many of the congressional districts in particular in this country, they are not party contested, right? It's been gerrymandered to the point where it's a certain Republican district. So the only thing that matters in that district is who wins the primary. And so primary fights have become exceedingly important to all of the incumbents because of that fact. So if someone's going to put up a primary opponent against you that might be well-funded, you're going to bend in that direction.
So here's an article, Sandy, today with the Nation of Change, how movements can keep politicians from selling out by understanding how mainstream political culture co-opts elected officials, grassroots groups can help them resist. This is what you've been talking about for a long time. It is a pattern we see again and again. New political hopefuls are elected to office, espousing progressive values and vowing to challenge the status quo in Washington, D.C. They are sent off with high hopes, but then over time they change. The promise never materializes. Worse yet, the politicians themselves begin to change. They become more distant from the supporters who first put them in power. They aspire for a higher office and assert their independence by bucking their base and playing to the center. They make amends with key commercial interests in their districts. They become apologists for the way things work, and they criticize those wanting bolder action as a naive and unduly, impatient. That's kind of what. How do you get out of that?
Well,
Democrats or Republicans, it's the same.
Well, money. It's, you know, what happens when they get to Washington is this whole so-called mainstream view in D.C. is largely driven by the financial interests that start educating the politicians about how the world really works. You know, you've got these ideological views, but look, this is how it works inside the Beltline, and how it works inside the Beltline. You know, people can call it centrism, but frequently the compromises that look like centrism are largely driven by K Street. And so, you know, who are you compromising with when you're compromising towards the center? Frequently what you're compromising with is the interest, the special interest that has its nose bent out of joint by whatever it is you're trying to do. And that ends up being defined as something that's the center.
You know, Sandy, it always points back to K Street.
Yeah.
You always go back to K Street. Look, 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday, that's Mondays with my co-host Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Who is it that called?
Dear Hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. The doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 41. Northerly winds, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 24. Tonight, mainly cloudy skies. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, highs around 42. Chance for snow Wednesday with highs in the low 30s. Mixed precipitation possible at times and highs in the low 40s on Thursday. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 29.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
AUKRadio.com.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, I want to get back to the article in this morning's The Nation of Change, how movements can help politicians from selling out in. And so you and I were talking during the break about, you know, and because it always goes back to Tom and the money and all of those things. But you find some longstanding congresspeople and senators who, you know, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders come to mind, who are willing to challenge all of that and try to expose what's taking place. But we can't get enough people to do that.
Yeah, Wisconsin had a guy like that, Bill Proxmire, who was right. A bit of an eccentric. That's what he was viewed as. But he was so popular. He did such a constant job of campaigning in the state, showing up at every state fair and every county fair. And, you know, he was around everyone. He was going to get reelected. He used to spend $300 on his reelections or something. He was immune from the kind of K Street pressure. He would stand up to it. He would talk about it. He made jokes about it. He gave, you know, he kind of took on the Pentagon budget. But these people are few and far between. You mentioned two of them, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. Those are two more very popular politicians who have the capacity to get reelected without a lot of money in support of them. And so they have the capacity to stand up, point their finger at special interests, but they get painted as mavericks by the establishment. We need a couple of things. One, I think people who get elected ought to be held, their feet ought to be held to the fire about what they promise by their constituents, and they ought not to get reelected simply on the basis of their capacity to have advertising dollars and have the other things that K Street can provide to them by carrying through on what they promise. And number two, we need more sunlight shining in the halls of Washington, and that needs to be a much more active media who gets in there and digs and uncovers. And also we need our elected people to start standing up and talking about the kind of pressure they're experiencing in the whole funding range and the whole K Street kind of lobbying. That should all get talked about. It should get exposed so that it couldn't happen in the dark the way it happens. Because now what happens is people think that they've gone to Washington and become savvy about how Washington works, right? And that's what happens to politicians. They get savvy and they figure out how Washington works. Unfortunately, the way it works is that the special interests have a great deal of sway, and they persuade all of Washington that toying the line of the special interests is a centrist point of view, okay, that that's centrism, and that typically when we see these major compromises to get things passed, it's a compromise between the principle and the financial interest that's being that's being endangered by it. So when the Obama health care, affordable health care, was getting passed, all the compromises were essentially with K Street special interests, right? To try and figure out, okay, how do we accommodate the desires and needs of the insurance industry? Well, you know, that right there, now we've just almost said it all in one sentence.
You know, Sandy, when you see, and as we are right now, you're seeing a changing of the guard, if you will, in Washington, D.C., where younger and younger, congressmen and senators are starting, well, not quite senators yet, but in Congress, are starting to make their way in. And so the older, more established people are leaving. And so does it make it these younger people more susceptible to K Street than the ones who were there? Because otherwise, you'll never see a way, Sandy, for it to change.
Well, hopefully, I mean, like we were talking on Friday about the end of the baby boom generation and the influx of the new younger folks. The new younger folks seem to have a much greater tendency to be willing to take positions which, as far as the mainstream is concerned, seem more extreme. So we've got the, you know, the AOC group, okay? And we've got, however, just the new younger people who appear to maybe be more immune from the pressure that is being applied in Washington from the so-called mainstream. Mainstream being, I guess, the baby boom generation and their viewpoint of things, because that's been the establishment right up until this moment. The establishment essentially is the baby boom generation, but it's going to be handing the baton on pretty soon, because the establishment can't continue to be the baby boomers.
Well, will we then start to see maybe the change that everybody's clamoring for? I think people are clamoring for it, and as this article talks about, the only way to really, you know, change those kinds of things, Sandy, is organized people pressuring. I was at an event yesterday, and it was Common Ground, an organization called Common Ground, that has all these mixtures of churches, mosques, synagogues, all of them organized, working on issues that impact and affect people. There were 800 people organized collectively, and not to mention how many they had on Zoom, to address an issue that is impacting and affecting average people. But that Sandy, seems to be the way to go about bringing pressure, having that many organized people working together as one.
I think so, although the area that gives me pessimism is the fact that you look at the polling data about what the American public thinks about gun control and then what it is we're doing in the legislatures across the country with respect to guns. The public seems to, in quite a very large majority, it's almost a supermajority of the country, wants to have more extensive gun controls, and yet we're moving in the direction of less controls all the time. Abortion rights. The polling data on that ran exactly contrary to what's happened politically.
All right, we've got to go to break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You can join us. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Lindsay Watts. Taking to the streets again, Israel's largest trade union group with 800,000 members is on strike adding to the surging protest movement against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's plan to overhaul the judiciary. More than 24 people killed after twisters roared through Alabama and Mississippi over the weekend. ABC's Whit Johnson is in the town of Rolling Fork, Mississippi.
The tornado's hitting at the most dangerous time, after dark.
All I could hear was breaking windows. It come through my house.
Much of Rolling Fork, Mississippi, unrecognizable, reduced to rubble, stretching for miles. Governor Tate Reeves touring the disaster zone with FEMA.
Former President Trump holding the first rally for his presidential run. It was in Waco, Texas, and he spent much of it proclaiming innocence in the multiple legal
cases. Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Crunchcast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinair. Here's what you need to know. Two questions about cash bail are on the ballot next week. The wording on the constitutional amendment questions causing confusion for some early voters. The first asks about setting conditions to protect the public from serious harm when releasing people before trial. The second asks if judges should be allowed to consider past convictions when setting bail. Groups speaking out against the amendment say they will disproportionately trap poor people behind bars. Republican sponsors say the amendments will protect the public. Both candidates for Green Bay's mayor say they've gotten threatening messages directed at their families. WPR reporting Wisconsin had the fourth most instances of threats or harassment toward election officials or poll workers in the country from January 2020 through September of 2022. Current Mayor Eric Gingrich and challenger Brown County Administration Director Chad Weininger will face off in the April 4th general election. I'm Jane Matinair. This is Civic Media News.
Kids. They're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project. Transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Show as always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Monday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. And so, Sandy, Vladimir Putin is threatening to put nukes in Belarus.
Yeah, Belarus.
Belarus.
Yeah.
Yeah, Belarus, and the United States is up in arms. And you know what he said? You've got nuclear weapons.
Well, yeah, I mean,
what are we talking about, Sid?
Yeah, I mean, the point is that there are nuclear weapons in countries immediately adjacent to Russia. There are nuclear weapons that have been put in countries that are not themselves nuclear countries, right? So when,
that we have,
so at least that's my understanding. So, you know, Germany, a whole bunch of countries have nuclear weapons in them that are NATO weapons that are not under the control of the country in which they're located. And that was what Putin was saying about these, that these are going to be they aren't going to cede control of these weapons to Belarus. They're going to be under the control of Russia, although he did say that there would be Belarusian trained people, that would be Belarusian, that would be manning the sites. So, you know, I'm not a fan of nuclear weapons, but I think sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. And you know, that's one of the problems with the way we handle our foreign policy, is that rules seem to apply to everyone else, but we don't seem to apply them in the same manner to ourselves. And we, the American public, are misled by what we're told by our government. And we're misled into thinking that these other countries are doing things that are particularly hostile and particularly different than the way we behave, when that might not be the case.
So Sandy, people may say, man, again, you're sounding like you're anti-American. Now listen to this. Tell me where this can be acceptable to you as an American. Putin said the move would counter the U.S.'s deployments of nuclear weapons in different European countries, placing nuclear weapons across the border from NATO member Poland. We are doing what they have been doing for decades, sanctioning them in certain allied countries, preparing the launch platforms and training their crews. Putin said in a state media interview on Saturday, we are going to do the same thing. How can I look at that, Sandy, fairly, right? Because that's what we should be doing, right? We should be looking at things not based on we're Americans, they're Russians. Fairly.
Well, I just think we should ring alarm bells when there's something alarming. This is not alarming. These are tactical nuclear weapons. They're being put into places that are potentially tactically important. We have tactical nuclear weapons stationed very close to all of our tactical enemies. We have submarines that go around the world with tactical nuclear armaments within them. I mean, you know, we live in a world of nuclear detente, but the detente only exists in the circumstance of relatively equivalent forces on each side. And so I'm not sure this is destabilizing. It's probably stabilizing, to put Russia in a position where they can feel less threatened rather than more threatened.
You know, Sandy, the more you look at these things and you know, you get to a point where you say, okay, I'm worried about what Russia is attempting to do, right? They've certainly got us in a situation where we need to be worried about this, we need to be worried about that. And so what you get out of all of this is the alarm that is being passed on to the American people through this kind of thing.
Well, it's through the rhetoric and our international posturing, okay? We do this international posturing, which I guess posturing doesn't work if you relay to the rest of the world that it's only posturing. So maybe we should do less posturing so that the American public truly understands what our position is. I mean, for instance, Taiwan, Honduras just over the weekend decided to recognize China instead of and not Taiwan, okay? And then that gave reason to understand how many nations recognize Taiwan. 12 nations in the entire world recognize the validity of Taiwan's independent status. They are places like St. Kitts. They are islands, the Falkland Islands. These are a very small and unimportant entities that have recognized. Guatemala is the most important economy that has recognized Taiwan as a country. 12 in the whole world. Incidentally, none of them are Western European countries. None of them are America. None of them are our allies, at least the allies we we talk about. And so here we are acting like Taiwan is a country that we are going to defend, and yet we don't even recognize it as a country, and neither does the rest of the world.
You know, Sandy, it all leads to this. This is in the alternate today, the Pentagon's budget from hell. So all of this talk, everything that we're talking about, all of these things lead to this. Somehow when it comes to Congress and the mainstream media, the true strangeness of the Pentagon budget always is missing in action. Despite arguments about the small things, just about everyone accepts that the United States must have a monstrous, all-powerful military and a military budget beyond compare. Beyond, in fact, all comprehension, and nothing seems to truly dent that sensibility. However, the fact that the Pentagon has been utterly incapable of winning, and listen to this part of it, yes, actually winning a war that matters, or even half matters, since World War II never fully seems to penetrate, not even on the 20th anniversary of the disastrous invasion of Iraq, America's own Ukraine. Only former President George W. Bush, who launched that invasion, gets it, subliminally. The lesson is all too clear. The more that's spent on our military and the more potentially destructive it gets, the less it's actually able to accomplish anything. Despite all but obliterating North Korea from the air, it couldn't beat the country's military aided by China in the early 1950s. It lost disastrously to distinctly underarmed rebels in Vietnam in the 1960s and early 1970s, and did so again more recently to the half-baked forces of the Taliban in Afghanistan. The response of Congress to such disasters is, in this century, rewarding the Pentagon with yet more barrels of money. That's really it in a nutshell. All of that money.
Yeah, the money. And the money is all, it's not really being made, it's not really being spent to protect the shores of the United States. It's all being spent to protect some international concept of now the neoliberal concepts of law and order around the world, okay? But we aren't accomplishing that. We didn't accomplish that in Iraq. We left Iraq in the state of least law and least order, much less than we found it. We didn't like the nature of the law and order we found it, but it was quite an organized economy at the time. And so our money is being spent for the purpose of some foreign policy which is undescribed to us, other than the fact that apparently we know it when we see it as to the circumstance in which we need to deploy troops or money. And so Ukraine came up on the horizon pretty quickly in about 2010, and we put it there. You know, we put it there with the nature of the way we decided to deal with Ukraine as compared to the way we decided to deal with Georgia and some of the other situations, Kazakhstan and the other situations in the old USSR republics. And this is all a function of our determination. We have determined these things. And we have decided that we will do state building in places where we decide, apparently, that it's appropriate to try and do it. We have, incidentally, never successfully accomplished state building.
Yeah, and basically that's exactly what this article is talking about. With all of the money that's been spent and all the things that have happened, we haven't walked away in victory in all of these theaters of war.
Well, victory.
And what would that look like anyway?
Yeah, we never defined victory for any of them. We haven't defined victory in the Ukraine situation. We don't go into these things with an announced end game other than the notion of victory. Victory was something where you vanquish the enemy, right? Well, we did that in World War II, and victory was maybe an important outcome there. But we had never, and in Korea, we ended up with a stalemate that didn't change the line of demarcation between North and South really at all. And other than that, we've ended up in circumstances where I suppose victory could have been the installation of a democratic government to our satisfaction, which state building is a very difficult course of conduct. The idea of imposing into a society and a culture a form of government which they have not selected themselves over their history, and believing that it will take effect. We can all remember the famous supposedly democratic vote in Afghanistan. People dipping their finger in paint. We gave a lot of exalted victory over the fact that we had installed a democracy in Afghanistan for the first time. It didn't last very long.
You know, Sandy, think of it this way. In a world where billionaires are running rampant and grabbing ever more wealth, the Pentagon is going to undo them all. And if nothing changes in coming years, Tom Dispatch regular William Hartberg notes today, become the world's first trillionaire. Imagine that. Something that might once have seemed inconceivable is now almost unstoppable. A future trillion-dollar military budget. It's coming.
It certainly is coming. I mean, it's coming on the current trajectory. I think what we all ought to be worried about much more, our country's policymakers ought to be much more worried about than our military, was the implication that is happening out of, I'll use the word that's being ballyhooed around now a lot, weaponizing the American dollar and the danger that has placed the dollar under as the world currency. And we're beginning to see the erosion of the world currency. There's fewer dollars being held in the major banks in the world today as a percentage of their assets than there were in the past. The dollar is not going to be used for transacting oil business between some countries now, Russia and China being the first one, but there's a definite chance that China will have the yuan as the currency of exchange for oil with respect to its dealings. If the dollar loses its world currency status, we have a huge problem. We have a huge problem with the size of our deficit and our ability to finance it, which is now in large part made very easy by the world currency status of the dollar and the need for everyone in the world to stash a lot of their foreign exchange in dollars and to invest it in dollar financial markets.
So Sandy, you really do see a coming time where the dollar is going to lose its prominence.
I would say that the dollar could and will lose its prominence if we don't change the trajectory of our foreign affairs. Using economic sanctions as a primary tool is primarily carried out because of the importance of the American dollar as a world currency. If we didn't have world currency status, sanctions don't work very well. Okay, many countries in the world are now worried about the notion that they could be the next Russia in terms of being the object of sanctions.
So, Sandy, hold that thought. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Monday. Monday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So,
the ACLU does not endorse or oppose candidates, but is issuing this voter information guide for the April 4th state Supreme Court election so voters can make an informed decision.
The state Supreme Court may rule on Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban. So where do the candidates land on abortion rights? Candidate Dan Kelly made his position clear when he repeatedly compared abortion to taking a life. He even worked for a group trying to ban all abortions here in Wisconsin. And candidate Dan Kelly has been endorsed by the three largest anti-abortion groups in Wisconsin. And what is candidate Janet Protasiewicz's position? She said women should have the right to decide for themselves.
I value a woman's freedom to make her own reproductive health care decisions.
With access to abortion on the line, know where the state Supreme Court candidates land. The record is clear. Dan Kelly opposes abortion rights. Janet Protasiewicz supports abortion rights.
Paid for by American Civil Liberties Union, Incorporated.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid.
Dude,
Did you hear about Cassie and Jake?
No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development?
Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 41. Northerly winds, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Lows dip down to about 24. Tonight, mainly cloudy skies. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, highs around 42. Chance for snow Wednesday with highs in the low 30s. Mixed precipitation possible at times and highs in the low 40s on Thursday. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 29.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
UAUKradio.com.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, I want to get back to what we were talking about before the break, because I think it really is important when you talk about the dollar and the dollar being the global currency and why that's so important, because you mentioned the sanctions and why, you know, we can sanction these nations. Are you saying then that if, you know, maybe the dollar is not the global currency and it doesn't give us the ability to sanction nations?
No, what happens is right now we can employ sanctions and they have quite an immediate effect, because we can essentially withdraw the ability of from a country to use the dollar. And since the dollar is used for almost all international transactions, that will almost immediately isolate that country economically. So we...
The way it is now.
The way it is now.
Right.
And so the fact that we can do that causes other countries to think, you know what, I don't really like the idea of the U.S. dollar being the world currency, because this world currency is willing to weaponize its world currency status against a particular country.
And make us bow.
Maybe they'll do it to me too.
Right.
Okay, so China's already talked about the fact that they would like to... They would be happier if the world wasn't relying on dollars for everything. They just agreed over the weekend to use the yuan for the transactions with Russia instead of used to be that even the Russian-Chinese oil transactions were carried out in dollars, because that's the way all world oil transactions were carried out. Its potential is that China could also urge that the Mideast use yuans for dollars that are for oil that is purchased by China. China is the biggest customer of Mideastern oil, we found out recently. Okay, so you can see that if countries decided to try and get the world currency to be something other than the dollar, they could be doing it for their own reason. The reason being that the U.S. has been willing to aggressively use the dollar's currency, world currency status, as a weapon. If we would de-weaponize it, we would cause the other countries to not be so worried about that fact. But the fact is we've now done it several times, and so that worry is out there. The other thing that can stand to affect the world currency status is if we have a serious bank crisis, if we have a serious inflation in the United States that is caused by the Fed trying to essentially introduce lots of dollars into banks to create safety for depositors in banks, in a widespread banking scare in the country, we could end up with an interest kind of fluctuation in the United States that would show an instability in the dollar, which one of the reasons the dollar is the world currency is it's about the most stable currency in the world. And its relative value to other currencies in the world is very stable. If that destabilizes, well, then there's another reason for countries not to want to use the dollar as the world currency. And if we aren't the world currency, it could take an hour to discuss all of the ways it would be detrimental to our economy. But I'd be interested in any caller who would suggest to the contrary. the dollar losing its world currency status would be very detrimental to our economy. It would be very detrimental to our capacity to incur the level of debt that we have. It would require that our legislature in Washington use a great deal more restraint about deficits, for instance, than they currently do. It would cause a pulling in of the horns in our economy that would be exceedingly painful.
You know, Sandy, I recall another point in time where there was a threat. It was Muammar Gaddafi in Libya, who did not want to deal with oil sales in the dollar.
Right.
He was trying to create a one African currency that would not, use the American dollar. And there was a big outrage about that. And
in fact, the United States was leaving Omar Gaddafi alone from a military standpoint, from an intervention standpoint, until he started getting that outrageous right. in his conduct. And that that level of conduct prompted our government to at least covertly take some real serious steps to undermine his government and to ultimately get rid of Omar Gaddafi.
So, I guess, Sandy, all what you just talked about is these things are all interconnected. And so that we have the power to bring nations to their knees with the way things are set up now. The nations don't ever, they're trying to get out from under that, right? Out from under that.
Yes.
And so if you're one of those nations, you want to see somebody else.
Well, if I were running the show, you know, if I were running the zoo, I would be tending to the knitting inside the country. I would be playing in our sandbox to make sure that our banks were well-regulated and strong and not subject. Banks are very fragile, and everyone has always known that banks are fragile because of this, the way they work. They take in deposits, and then they lend out a significant percentage of them. They rely on the fact that people aren't going to come show up at the bank and ask for their money back in anything other than the usual pattern because they can't withstand even a mini run on a bank. And so I'd want to make sure that I had a good regulatory system inside of our financial system. I'd want to make sure that our economy was on a good footing. I'd like to make sure that we had a good domestic situation. I would be much less likely to spend a whole bunch of money on our defense budget, which actually, in a way, causes the world to be more skeptical about wanting to be subject to the U.S. dollar as the world currency, and it's a huge drain on our economy, a huge drain.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So, Sandy, I want to talk about...
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
Over on. If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.